Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.25 billion back to our customer owners over the last 8 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
My wife's like, I love Seinfeld. I find Seinfeld funny. I love Larry David. I find him funny. But you, I don't find funny. I'm like, what? I don't understand. What do I have to do?
What's the bar here, woman?
Right. I mean, I'm serving Congress. It's a government about nothing. It's perfect.
Your task will not be an easy one. Your enemy is well-trained, well-equipped, and battle-hardened.
There is not a liberal America and a conservative America. There is the United States of America.
Good night and good luck.
Hey, folks. Welcome back to the Lincoln Project Podcast. My guest today is Congressman Jared Moskowitz. He is a guy you have probably seen from time to time on MSNBC and elsewhere, making James Comer cry. But what you don't know is he's a much more interesting guy than just the guy who trolls James Comer like a boss. He has been an emergency management manager in Florida. This is a topic that we're going to talk a little bit about today. And he's been one of the rising stars of the Democratic Party as somebody who brings a level of energy and youth and engagement that is sorely missing sometimes in a caucus that feels a little older than it needs to be. So, Jared, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show today. Very much appreciate your time. I wanted to start out because, you know, I'm a Florida guy. You're a Florida guy. I feel like we just dodged a pretty major bullet on Milton, and in part because we were pretty ready for it.
Yeah, so a couple of things on that. So first of all, the Division of Emergency Management had actually exercised a Category 5 storm going into Tampa. They had done that several years ago. I was the director when we did that. Kevin Guthrie, who's the director now, was my deputy. So they had exercised that scenario. That doesn't mean, of course, that there wouldn't have been unprecedented things to deal with. But yes, the state was ready for an event like that. We exercised it because we literally said, what's the worst case scenario for Florida? What's a black swan event? And it was that. Luckily, we didn't get a Cat 5 into Tampa. And so, yes, I think if you're looking at this and you say, hey, it could have been worse for that area. We didn't see the historic storm surge. Yeah, that area dodged a bullet. Other areas to the south, like in Sarasota, you know, and in Port Charlotte, they did see historic storm surge there.
Right.
You know, so for them, it was bad. Also, I think the story of this storm is going to be the tornadoes. 126 tornado warnings, 45 tornado touchdowns, the most in Florida history. Second most tornado warnings other than the 2011 Alabama tornado outbreak. So people on the East Coast not getting even hurt, you know, hurricane force winds or even sustained tropical storm force winds got tornadoes. So that's going to be a lesson learned. Kevin Guthrie's actually talked to people about that. You know, these outer bands can create tornadoes. So, but yes, I do think if you're looking at it holistically, it could have been worse.
Yeah, I think that's right. And what folks I don't think know is that Florida is like the breeding ground for the best of the best on emergency management stuff in the country. We face these things at a scale. The state is much larger than anybody not from Florida realizes. When you start doing this sort of thing, and the risk factors here are just rising as climate changes and everything else. I do think that's something we should be very grateful for, even though the damage in it from Clearwater down through Port Charlotte does look pretty significant.
And, you know, look, to the governor's credit, this governor actually understood, hey, the Division of Emergency Management is something that's very important. And when I was there, he invested millions of dollars into the division, raising salaries, trying to attract talent, understood you have to spend money to get the resources here. And so, yeah, between him and Kevin, that is a well-oiled machine. And then you have FEMA, obviously, on the ground doing what FEMA does best. And that's why, you know, Deanne Criswell is here. The administrator is here in the EOC in Tallahassee. That's very rare to have that, the administrator right there to get things approved very quickly, to cut through that red tape. So I expect Florida's response to this to be, you know, very good, just like we saw in Ian. There will be some challenges with debris removal, and that's just because there are six other states doing debris removal operations, and there's only so much equipment that can do that. But my guess is Florida will work through those challenges as well.
Yeah, I think we'll be down to a million or so people without power by the end of the week. and it's gonna wrap it up, I think, pretty quickly. I do, however, Jared, wonder about the dangers of Jewish space lasers and weather control machines that Marjorie Taylor Greene continues to insist on putting out there. And while it's funny to talk about how ridiculous they are on this shit, my question is, like, how dangerous is it that they're spreading this disinformation that they have no shame about, in terms of, like, we're seeing people resisting help from FEMA in North Carolina right now. Talk to us a little bit about why you took Marjorie Taylor Greene down pretty hard yesterday on this stuff.
Well, first of all, it's dangerous because it's going to cost people's lives. Because first of all, we need people to trust government institutions, right? Which are under attack every day. That could be, you could do 10 hours on that, okay? But when government, local government, you know, mayors, county administrators, local emergency managers say you need to evacuate your home, take your family, take your dog, take your valuables and leave, we need people to trust government that advice is the right advice and listen.
Right.
If they don't trust government and listen to that, they're going to die. And so as you break down that trust, you're eventually going to affect these people who we're you know, the next storm away to seeing Marjorie Taylor Greene to say, hey, don't evacuate. The hurricane's not really coming there.
Right.
Okay. Don't trust what you're seeing on TV. Don't listen to them. It's very dangerous. Every emergency management director I know, Democrat or Republican, okay?
Right.
And there's a lot of Republican emergency management directors, okay? They have no time or tolerance for that bullshit. So, yeah, when Marjorie Taylor Greene says that there's a weather machine, okay, that, you know, is sending all of these hurricanes, my simple question for her is, well, why didn't Donald Trump unplug the weather machine when he was president? Right. We had lots of hurricanes.
Sure.
When
did.
Donald Trump was president. OK, we had them devastate, you know, Puerto Rico and Maria. Why didn't he just unplug the weather machine? And so this stuff is utterly ridiculous. But as you know, right, we live in an age of misinformation and disinformation. And unfortunately,
absolutely,
emergency management doesn't have a protective bubble around it. And then you get the foreign actors who run foreign accounts see this and they're like, let's add to the confusion. Let's get
100%.
Americans fighting over whether or not FEMA actually helps people. And so, yeah, you got Marjorie working, you know, with the Russians trying to convince people that, you know, maybe we're making hurricanes. And so, yeah, it's, and then they back it up with, well, no, there's science that we can seed the clouds. Okay. By the way, the science of seeding the clouds and creating a little bit of rain in Dubai is different than creating a Category 5 storm. And if we have the technology to create a Category 5 storm, where's the technology to make it go away? My favorite was this, though. My favorite was the people going, you know, I have never seen in my lifetime a hurricane form in the Gulf of Mexico and a Cat 5 come for Tampa. Yeah, you know why? Genius. Okay, you haven't seen that happen in your lifetime. It's because it happened 100 years ago. You weren't alive when the last time it happened. But they're listening to the chairwoman of the Mensa caucus, Marjorie Taylor Greene, with this bullshit.
You know, it was like Marjorie Taylor Greene retweeting tweets from Cat Turd about hurricanes. I was like, we've reached peak fucking stupidity.
Turd was like, it's a Cat 5, then it's a Cat 3, it's a Cat 2. I'm never listening to the Weather Channel. Dude, the Weather Channel is giving you the information. Hurricanes don't stay the same strength. Have you been paying attention for the last 18 years? They change strengths, right? Sometimes it rains, sometimes it doesn't. Why does that happen? I mean,
amazing.
I'm really worried for those college kids out there who are like, hey, I want to go serve my community. I want to go be in public service, looking at this and saying, fuck it, I'm going to Wall
Street.
Right.
No chance. No thanks. Pass. To change the subject from weather to the endless embarrassments of the Republican caucus, and you have become somebody who calls their bullshit on every one of these fake impeachments, these phony investigations, all that stuff. Is it just that Comer is that fucking stupid? Because that guy strikes me as somebody with a IQ of like a warm glass of spit.
So, Rick, I got to stop you there. I don't like how you're talking about my friend. Okay. Right. You know. Okay. I got to defend my friend James. Okay. Look at this whole Congress, right? What is this Congress known for? This Congress is known for making history, right? They removed the speaker. That never happened in American history. They tried to remove a second speaker, right? Unfortunately, you know, that got stopped. They needed the Democrats' help to stop that and table that motion. They impeached a cabinet secretary. That hadn't happened in 150 years.
Right.
Okay. They're finding all these people in contempt, like that's going to do anything rather than solving any problems. They had a half a dozen hearings on gas stoves, the number one issue for the American people.
Clearly.
Okay. And they can't keep the government open without crawling to the Democrats begging for help. So take that, and then you get the crown jewel. My good friend James with his impeachment of Joe Biden. And I just think we don't give him enough credit. Here's what this guy engineered. He was like, who can we have as our witnesses in the committee to show the evidence that Joe Biden should be impeached? Who should we get? How about a Chinese foreign spy? Okay, we'll go with that. What's his background? Oh, well, he was working and trying to sell Iranian oil. Oh, great. Let's get him. We'll take his information. Who else do we have? Oh, how about we work with the Russians? Do they have any disinformation? Oh, yeah, we have this agent who is getting information from Russian intelligence. Let's take that. Okay, he gets indicted because we find out he's working with the Russians and getting. And then James is like, okay, we've had these two things. We also lost an informant for a period of time. How can we top it off? I know. Let's get someone to testify from prison via Zoom in the committee. How about that? So, I mean, what the funny part about this is that the untold story is that every Republican on that committee, okay, has literally come to the Democrats and say, please make it stop. Please. Please, Jared, please. Can you be nice to James? Can you go easy on James? You have broken him. And I'm like, I've done nothing. What James has done is he decided as chairman to step down from the chairmanship and pick a fight with a freshman. I literally have I'm like the second to last person to speak. I have the lowest amount of seniority on that committee. Okay. But he decided to do this thing. And so I was like, okay, fine. No problem, James. One day he was like, stop the clock. I was like, stop the clock. You're giving me more time. I'm like, yeah, James. And then he's like, you're a smurf. And I'm like, oh, talk dirty to me, James. Keep going.
Baby.
Right. And I knew, I was like, oh, he has no idea what he's gotten himself into. Because I'm a guy who has no problem working with Republicans when I think they're reasonable. But I will also call out the bullshit when they're doing it. And so, yeah, when I knew that this was all nonsense, you know, I said, hey, James, I'll make the motion. You second it. And when he literally threw up in his mouth and swallowed it, we knew we were finished here.
Right, right. But I mean, this performative bullshit that they do, it has become, and I don't think everybody knows this outside of the process. This really is only about generating content for Fox and email fundraising appeals for their lists. It's a hamster wheel of bullshit where they are constantly doing this. They know. I mean, everybody on that committee knows this is a prank, right? On the Republican side, they know it's all bullshit.
Yeah, it's a campaign committee. It's a fundraising committee. It's a committee to make Donald Trump happy. There's no doubt that's what this committee was used for the last 2 years. But you know what? You know what they didn't count on?
What's that?
And Jasmine Crockett, myself, Dan Goldman, led by Jamie Raskin, AOC. You know what they didn't count on? Robert Garcia, you know, Maxwell Frost. They didn't count on the Democrats deciding to match their energy and stop the defensive strategy and go on the offense. They did not count on us
going on
the offensive and turning around the bullshit on them. And every time we did it, they were a deer in the headlights. They're not used to Democrats doing that. And we have so embarrassed them in that committee, okay, that, you know, fine, James, have more hearings. Keep it going. Because the American people now have seen through it. I mean, he just goes on Newsmax, on Fox, we're going to impeach him, we're going to impeach him. Those viewers now know it was all BS. It didn't happen.
So the origin story of the going on offense strategy, I don't know where it came from out of you guys, but I have to tell you, watching it as somebody who likes to go on offense, you guys are clearly having more fun, and you're actually doing it with a sense of like happy warrior energy, because they cannot figure you guys out. They cannot unfuck themselves and push back. I mean, does it almost feel unfair sometimes? Because they really are not helping themselves in these fights.
Yeah, once in a while when James and I are going back and forth, I'm like, man, this isn't fair.
Is this elder abuse?
You know, but well, by the way, I thought it was, and then I found out that he's only a couple of years older than I am, and I'm thinking to myself, what kind of life did this guy have? Okay. By the way, so, funny story. I knew this thing with me and James was real when we both were on the same flight to Miami. Okay. Right. We both went to baggage claim. And you know, after you get off the plane before you get back, you go to the bathroom. And we were both in the same restroom, and we were the only two guys in the restroom, and we were both at the urinal. And it was like both of us didn't even know the other person was there. We washed our hands and like no recognition of each other. And I'm like, I think he's mad.
He's mad. Trust me. That guy.
Yeah.
And look, there was a generation of these guys that came up in the slightly pre-Trump and Trump era where it's all performative. It's all garbage. It's all, you know, playtime.
But most of them are not good at it, Rick. Most of them are not good at it. There's a couple that are decent. And, you know, I tell those guys all the time, I'm like, you're using your talents for evil. But there's a couple of them that are good at it. But most of them aren't good. Not only are not good, they're snowflakes. You know, they try to be like, we're the tough people. As soon as you land a blow, they melt, okay, and fall apart. And so
who do you think are the worthy adversaries in the caucus?
I mean, I think Jim Jordan and Matt Gaetz are good at what they do, okay? Mm-hmm. You know, I think those are worthy adversaries. If you look at, you know, Judiciary and that committee, I think those are probably their two top communicator debaters kind of in the moment that, you know, are creative to score a point. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I've known Matt a long time since he was in the state house in Florida, and he's clever. He's not stupid. Matt is, people should recognize Matt is not dumb. Matt may be a degenerate, but he's not stupid. And Jordan has this sort of like mulish persistence that I think is his superpower. He has no shame, so he just keeps pressing forward.
Yeah, well, you'll notice in that hearing where I had Comer and Jordan, right, and I called for the vote, you notice that, you know, Jordan was lassing and Comer was like, sad face, you know?
Right.
And so, you know, some of these guys, like I have good conversations with Jordan, right? Some of these guys you can talk to and have good conversations, and it's like the debate team. It's like, okay, you won that round, I won this round. Right. And you can still have that, you know, jovial kind of, hey, you guys were good today kind of deal. But some of the guys that are just weak, okay, they it's so personal to them and they get upset. And now, you know, now you got someone grumpy. But Marjorie's the real deal. What you see on TV, that is not fake. That's not
I've
fake.
I've heard that. I've heard that.
That is not a show. You will walk by her in the hallway and she'll start screaming at you, wanting to know where the 101 Dalmatians are. Okay. Oh yeah, she'll go crazy.
Yeah, she's the real deal. She is quite something. Hey, so I want to wheel back to Florida for a second. The race for president in Florida is much closer than people thought it would be. I still think it's a high hill to climb. But give me your perspective on where you think the race is going. I want to talk to you a little bit about Amendment 4 and the Senate race, because all these I think are sort of big questions that are going to shape the election.
Yeah, I mean, look, for me, I've always believed that we should be playing in Florida more, especially against Donald Trump. First of all, Donald Trump doesn't have a path to victory without Florida.
Correct.
Okay. And two, it gets under his skin, right? Like, I would love if I could get Kamala or Tim Walz down here to go have a huge rally, you know, just 60 minutes from Mar-a-Lago and just unhinge Trump. Right.
Oh, at the same time, bringing Democrats. He'd lose his mind.
Okay. And at the same time, right, trying to get, getting Democrats organized. We have Amendment 4 on the ballot, obviously dealing with a woman's right to choose. I think that's going to pass. I think you're going to have people vote for, Trump and vote for that amendment. So that, I think, is going to hit the 60% threshold. You know, but the one thing that's going on in Democratic politics nationally, which I don't understand is, and don't get me wrong, I'm happy to try to go after Texas, but we're pouring so many resources into Texas, okay? But we're just ignoring Florida. No, we got the money, right? We have money, right? We don't have a money problem. And so we should be helping in Florida. We should be doing more, right, to try to win that Senate seat, to try to keep it closer. because there's always re-elections. You always want to reestablish that for the next go around. Yes, Republicans have a voting advantage here on the voter roll. But we can't give up Miami-Dade County. We can't give up Palm Beach County. And the way the electoral map works, that until you can turn Texas one day, you can deny Republicans, you can deny the Republicans a win if you can win Florida. We got to keep Florida purple.
Yeah, this is something I think, you know, and I've had this conversation with Democrats. I'm like, I'm an ex-Republican. I helped build the system in Florida. I know what the, I know what it is. And I can tell you folks, it's strong, but it's brittle. There are ways to win here for a smart Democrat statewide, and putting pressure on guys like Rick Scott, I think is a high order good for the party, because, you know, someday Rick Scott will be summoned back to his mothership from whatever planet he came from, but this is I mean, Marco wants to do something else. Scott is at the, you know, at the end of his career. And the state is still much more in play than people think. It's not been in play because they haven't played on the Democratic side. They haven't come here with the investment on it. And I think that's what always shocks me, is like, there are seats here that are winnable that they walk away from. And I mean that at the state legislative race level and at the federal level.
After the disappointment of 2000, right, when that all went down, people just got sour nationally, the national campaign people, fundraisers, they got sour on Florida. Obama won it, but Obama was a unique talent. He came here and built that apparatus for both of his campaigns. Right. And then when he left, we had nothing. Okay. But it needs long-term sustained investment here. You can't just give away Florida, right? When Democratic bastions in the Northeast are bleeding people here and are bleeding electoral votes. Florida's increasing in electoral votes, right? Where we have blue states decreasing. And so this is, I think, more purple in Florida than we are in Texas at the moment. Maybe 10 years from now, Texas will be purple. But I just don't, if resources were stretched thin, it would be one thing. But when we're raising money hand over fist to not try to do more here in Florida,
100%.
You know, we got to get over the past. We got to get over the past and we got to invest here.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think that there's a degree of, there's a demographic change in Florida, as you're correct. A lot of people from blue states are coming here, but there's also a purely actuarial table problem for the Republicans, is that the average age of their voters is 67 years old. They're going to have a big boomer die-off, to put it in the bluntest terms I can, over the next 20 years. There's going to be a big drop-off of the core of their constituency in this state. It's going to change things fundamentally.
Don't be down on that. I represent Boca Raton. We're known for our nursing.
Listen,
home.
I got you. You know, but statewide there will be a shift, but it won't matter if the Democrats haven't started to do the work in advance. You just can't pick it up one day and say, "Oh, we've got a statewide operation again. We're doing fine." It's got to be something more cohesive and more organized over time.
Yeah, it's got to be a decade's worth of investment. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, it can't be one election and one election and one election. Build it up, tear it apart. You know, it's got to be sustained investment. Again, Florida is a state that can deny them a pass. There is no path for them without Florida.
And look, if you end up putting them even, you can spend a little bit of money and get a big return on investment. Because if Trump, for instance, and I'm hearing a lot of rumors that they're about to start buying here, even though they are ahead, even in their own polls in Florida. Because they're so freaking nervous everywhere else, there's a way to like run their numbers out. You could spend a little to make them spend a lot in Florida.
You draw them into a fight. That's why if you can get someone from the campaign here to have a huge rally, man, that will start that spending. That will draw them out. You know, it. We all know this. The best way to beat Donald Trump is to get Donald Trump to beat himself. We saw Kamala do that in the debate. We saw her do that in the debate, right?
She just,
you know, and that was my favorite, right? Everybody was like, Kamala's people came out. They're like, here's our strategy. We're going to get under Donald Trump's skin. And the Donald Trump campaign goes, we know Kamala's strategy. She's going to try to get under our skin. We're not going to allow it. So everyone is telegraphing. Everyone's telegraphing this. And immigration comes up and Democrats are like, oh no, right? Like that's Donald Trump's strong suit. And what's Kamala going to say? And she just goes, and people are leaving your rallies. And then all of a sudden, Trump, diarrhea of the mouth. They're eating the cats, they're eating the dogs, yada, right? And so, and the pets and the things and all of this, right? And so, right, like, I've never seen someone say, I'm going to do this as my strategy. I'm telling you right now, and someone say, we know your strategy. We have a protective bubble around it. And then as soon as you launch the strategy, the protective bubble went, right, and gone.
Yep.
And so, like, if they just came here to his turf, it'll undo him more.
I think that's absolutely right. I mean, look, she could do what I would love her to do is go down, do a rally in the Cali Ocho and say, you know, I'm running as a pro-business Democrat. Fidel Castro was a monster who should burn in hell. And Donald Trump is his imitator. And watch what happens. Trump would spend a week throwing shit against the wall and screaming on Truth Social before he could unfuck himself from that. There really is a psychological opportunity there, I think, that would disturb him. And frankly, you know what? Happy Democrats and fired up Democrats go vote, you know? And folks, if you don't know Florida, everybody who's listening, you can get about 40% of the vote out of three counties in South Florida, Dade, Broward, and Palm Beach. And there are a lot of people there. And there are a lot of people there who are swing voters, even now, and split ticket voters, even now. And I love the strategy.
Yet the strategy to win in Florida is very simple. You got to maximize your vote in Palm Beach, Dade, and Broward, along with Orange, Hillsborough, and Duval, right?
Yep.
Right? And then you just got to lose by less in some of these areas.
Right.
That's it, right? Yep. I mean, that's all you got to do is lose. We're going to lose, but lose by less. Don't lose by 40. Go lose by 29, okay? And that is the path. And we've seen that. But you got to get the people to turn out. You got to fire them up. The Democrat votes are here. They're not turning out.
Yep. Yeah, that's exactly right. Well, Jared Moskowitz, I want to thank you for coming on the Lincoln Project podcast today, brother. You are funny as hell. And I love that in a leader because people being too ponderous in this world is not an asset. And you're bringing a lot of light and heat on these guys that they deserve. And I want to thank you so much for coming on the podcast today. Tell people where they can find you on social media.
They can send me it on Twitter, X, or whatever he's going to rename it next. Jared E. Moskowitz on X. And, you know, that I run that account myself. And then, you know, I'm on Instagram and I'm on Facebook as well. I'm not on TikTok. I think people put me on TikTok, but I'm not on TikTok.
Right.
But I appreciate you saying I'm funny. You know, my wife tells me that I'm not funny.
Well, you know what? Your comic stylings are very, very welcome in the halls of Congress, my friend.
My wife's like, I love Seinfeld. I find Seinfeld funny. I love Larry David. I find him funny. But you, I don't find funny. I'm like, what? I don't understand what I have to do.
What's the bar here, woman?
Right. I mean, I'm serving Congress. It's a government about nothing. It's perfect.
Oh, my God. This is the best podcast I've done in weeks. Oh, man. Well, Jared, thank you again so much for coming on. We'll talk to you again very soon.
Thanks, Rick. Appreciate it.
The Lincoln Project podcast is a Lincoln Project production. Executive produced by Whitney Hayes, Ben Howe, and Joseph Werner-Cheney. Produced and edited by Whitney Hayes and Jeff Taylor.
And good luck.